Welcome to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith Podcast, your source for coverage, opinions, and coaching of underdog stuff in politics, culture, and personal life. Play it, subscribe to it, leave a review, and most importantly, enjoy it. Welcome to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast that we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. Underdog Stuff, your source for coverage, opinions, and coaching of Underdog Stuff, the uns, the uninhibited.
Yeah.
The unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
The unavoidable, the underrated, the unjust, the un, you get it by now, Underdog Stuff in politics, culture, and personal life. And to take you on that journey every week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, entrepreneur, consultant, coach, on-air personality, representing the city of brotherly love, now living in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And to my left, if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can see and hear Asha Davis.
Hi.
Award-winning advertising executive.
That's one.
Comedy writer.
Two.
And proud Torontonian Carabana.
Canadian. This weekend to be Canadian Torontonian of the entire year. You see your whole Instagram feed flooded with Cardi B at Carabana.
See, and that's why I'm grateful you're here, because I'm thinking to myself, she may have been considering going to Carabana.
I've been going since I was 16 years old, so.
Okay, so you like, I've been there, done that.
Been there, done that.
I ain't mad at you. And shout out to MDOT.
You.
A.K.A. Marlon on the ones and twos. And also shout out to Kirsten Magwood, who is in the city of brotherly love for an event today. And she will be back with us next week. And she is part of the Underdog Stuff team, too. All right. Today's topic. Hustle and flow. Part duh.
Part duh. You know, and just while we're saying duh, I want to just... I just want to take two, because for the past 2 weeks, we've been in a different studio.
Yes.
And I'm really happy to be back in the right studio. People can call in. Really excited to get our callers back involved and to get the Facebook Live comments. So guys, don't be shy. Call in, comment on Facebook. We're really looking forward to you guys participating tonight.
Yes, we are. And for those who are watching on Facebook Live, I just repeated the mistake that I did a couple weeks ago, which is I'm looking for the camera. And I realized that we should be adjusting one of these
cameras
instead of the camera on the laptop. So for those who are watching on Facebook Live, we appreciate you at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith, G-R-E-G-R-E-G-O-R.
Guy can't even spell his name today.
It's been that type of week. But you can find the show on Facebook and on WHCR.org. Or if you're driving around New York City, just go to 90.3 FM on your radio dial. And please come along for the journey with your comments on Facebook Live. Or you can call in the show, because we're back in the studio, as mm-hmm. Asha just mentioned. And the phones are working again at area code 212-650-6903. That's 212-650-6903. Today's show, Hustle and Flow Part 2. Who's hustling forward, backwards, or just spinning in circles?
Circumlocuting. Talking in circles.
That was on my to-do list from last week, to Google that word.
Merriam-Webster.com.
Who's she?
Okay.
That was a joke. Some folks may be tuning in the first time going, he thought that Merriam-Webster was... I got to make sure they know I that was a joke.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So today's show will include, obviously, unavoidable stories.
Yeah.
Which there's always several unavoidable stories. Also, and they involve politics and, of course, Donald Trump. And we have some unfinished business.
Oh.
Yeah, man. There's, you know, Colin Kaepernick continues to be in the news.
Yeah.
Actually, I take that back. People talking about Colin Kaepernick continue to be in the news.
And we got to check that, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. Some folks need to check themselves before they wreck themselves.
Oh, I thought, okay. Look at you.
Yeah. Every now and then.
Knowing rap lyrics and stuff.
I know who Miriam is, and I know some rap lyrics.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about some pop culture stuff, which I may or may not know a lot about, but my parents are from South Carolina.
Yeah.
And our pop culture topic is about the South.
Is about the South, with some new shows coming out potentially on HBO versus Amazon.
Yeah, back to when America was great again, right?
Imaginary.
Yes, very true. And then in the second hour.
Yeah.
Because we have a second hour.
Because it's summer hours, right?
Summer hours, yes. We will talk about hustle and flow on a personal level, about my journey as an entrepreneur. And who knows, you may even share some about your journey, too.
The coach getting back to coaching.
Yes, it's been too long. And word association game.
Oh, that'll be fun. It's just there's no guests today, so it'll just be us.
And all the underdogs out there, they can play along with us.
Okay, well, we should give them the question earlier.
That is very true. And we may end the show with this segment called Uninhibited.
We may? No, we will.
I love the... declaring it.
I am declaring it, like the declaration of uninhibited.
I'll try to make sure we have as little time as possible for uninhibited. With that, let's get into the show. Unavoidable stories of the week. Affirmative action.
Yeah.
Is back in the news.
Wow.
And we get to talk about, are we hustling forwards, backwards, or...
Circumlocuting.
Maybe during one of the breaks, I'm going to look that up. All right. Donald Trump has a point of view on affirmative action.
Oh.
He has a point of view on a lot of things.
Okay. What is his POV?
Yeah. So before we dig into like affirmative action being front and center this past week, let's get some perspective on 45.
Mm-hmm.
The Twitter in chief, and his thoughts on affirmative action when he was on Meet the Press in 2015. Let's go to clip one.
I'm fine with affirmative action. I mean, I expanded.
Or it should be limited.
Well, it should be, you know, you have to also go free market. You have to go capability. You have to do a lot of things. But I'm fine with affirmative action. We've lived with it for a long time, and I've lived with it for a long time. And I've had great relationships with lots of people, so I'm fine with it.
Wow.
He's fine with it. He's not for or against it. He's just fine with it.
What? I would say that's at least
circumlocuting, talking around an issue.
Yeah, but he's not in that clip hustling us backwards.
I mean, he's staying in place. Exactly. He's treading water.
And that would actually be a good thing, given that the Supreme Court continues to find that it is okay for race to be used as criteria for college admissions.
I think the why is important in that statement, though.
Well,
because it's not fair in a universe where, in an America where since its inception, every person was treated equally, regardless of race, then that type of clause would actually be unreasonable. Do you know what I mean? So you have to actually set the reason for that law in context in order for it to make sense.
Yes, because what you're saying is that, and the reason why we're talking college admissions is because affirmative action became a hot topic again this week because of some of the rulings related to college admissions and race.
Yes.
And to your point, affirmative action means we take steps to reconcile or to give assistance to groups or people that have historically had a challenge in getting equal opportunity.
Not had a challenge. I think when you frame it like that, it minimizes it. Who have historically been fundamentally prevented, fundamentally oppressed from achieving and from getting the same opportunities as people who do not have that skin color.
I would agree with that. And we saw that come loud and clear when Ms. Fisher, who went up against the University of Texas in a Supreme Court case, arguing that she didn't get in because she was white.
Mm.
and that the college favored minorities over her, who she felt she was just as or more qualified than.
That's really interesting.
And for context, Ms. Fisher is a white woman who was feeling like there was reverse discrimination because of practices of looking at a range of ways to evaluate who should come into the University of Texas.
Oh, I'd love to know more about that.
Yes. And what happens is, what the court ruled was that you cannot admit someone into college based solely on their race.
Right.
They're like, yeah, we know we've oppressed people and there's been a lot of bad things that have gone on. But the way to rectify that is not to just say you get in because you're black and you don't get in because you're white. That would be overly simplifying things. And that would just be reaching potentially too far to make things better. So what folks have said is, yeah, we should consider race along with income and test scores and a bunch of other things as part of the criteria to get in, to have a representative and diverse student body.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, there's always going to be a limited number of slots of availability within a university. And I think to say that because a certain amount of slots are being designated to people of color, that obviously if there are 1,000 slots for general public and there are 50 slots for people of color, just because you are the 1,001 person from the general public and you don't qualify to be in one of those 50 spots for people of color, that is not the same as discrimination.
Very, very true. And I think it's also an example of sometimes people get a little too entitled.
Exactly.
And aren't used to no.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of colleges. University of Texas isn't the only college that someone can apply to get into or to get rejected from.
Exactly. And I think when you think about, you know, the motto, what I think is really interesting and what this sparks in me is the motto that I think every little black kid or kid of color is taught by their parents when they're kids, which is fundamentally different than I think than, you know, what non-people of color are taught. And when you're a kid of color, your parents teach you that you always have to work twice as hard and be twice as good to get half as much, right?
Yeah.
Every kid of color that I know has heard that at some point from their parents in some stance of growing up, right?
Yep.
So if you think about that and you think about, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, being in a work environment and how as people of color, it's sometimes astonishing how mediocrity gets opportunities to flourish in professional environments, you know,
like the White House.
Right. Look how smart.
And I'm talking 45, not 44.
Right. But what exactly? So that's a great example. Look how smart the black guy had to be. You know what I mean? To become president versus what has historically sort of been the norm.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I was having a discussion the other day with someone about LeVar Ball, and we're going to bring this back to the Obama piece, and folks were getting on him about, well, I wish he wasn't so loud, or I wish he would just, you know, calm it down a little. And it was an example of like, you have to be like an angel or a saint if you're sometimes a person of color. And it's like, look at all the good this guy does. He's a husband. He's a father. He's trying to instill entrepreneurship and ownership to his sons. And he just believes and puts some pressure on him. And they're like, well, you know, these are all things that's wrong with him. To that point, and you bring up Obama, he darn near had to be a superhero
exactly.
to become president. Married to one woman. 2.5 kids. We know he has two, but you know what I'm saying here. Had to go to Harvard. No scandals, no, like, he had to darn near be a perfect person to get the opportunity to even run and then become elected. And then, oh, by the way, 2 terms. Shout out to him.
Well, it's funny. We have a Facebook Live comment. Daryl's asking, Asha, do they have affirmative action in the Great White North?
And just so folks know, let them know what that is, because Great White North, and we're talking.
People like, know that that's Canada. Don't underestimate our listeners.
That you're not talking about North Dakota or something like that. I just want to make sure that people know that you're talking about old Canada.
as far as I know, there's no law as it stands in America, like affirmative action in Canada, but there are an array of scholarships and things you can do that you can apply for sort of as a person of color or as somebody that fits within that sort of diversity spectrum. But I think, again, what's different about Canada is that our system was not necessarily inherently set up with the same sort of divides as the US system was set up with. Like, we never had segregation as you guys had it, which was a legal law in this country for a number of years. Like, that never existed in Canada, you know? And so, you know, for the most part, the country has been set up to try to sort of make it equal for everyone, right? So our costs for school in general are things that are subsidized through taxes and through the government. So, you know, I graduated from one of the top schools in the country. I don't have student debt because the price per year is actually a reasonable price that somebody could pay off in a reasonable amount of time. You know what I mean? You know, or so, you know what I mean? So, and also, but I think it's important to also understand that in Canada doesn't have the same population as the US has, you know, so I think that's also, that history, of, you know, sort of systematic in law, legal sort of racism to a degree, you know, just isn't as sort of inherent in some of these other societies.
Yeah. And shout out to Daryl for commenting. And this is a very good question. And the question we have for folks listening along to either call in at 212-650-6903 or comment on Facebook Live, facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith. Do you think there's still a place for affirmative action in America? And while we've talked about it in terms of race, there are affirmative action programs for females, for Asian Americans, for Hispanic Americans, for those based on sexual orientation.
Yeah.
So, you know, let us know whether you believe that it's still needed to give assistance to different segments of our population that may feel like they don't get equal opportunities. I'm not talking about equal outcomes. I'm talking about access to equal opportunity. With that, we're going to take a quick comment from a caller. Name and where you calling from?
Deborah from Manhattan.
Hey, Deborah, how you doing? Welcome back.
How you feel? There is no doubt in my mind that affirmative action is needed. And I know that, you know, we're just kind of like laying back and just discussing it. But this is not funny, because sooner or later, they're going to push more and more laws, and you know it's ugly. It's really ugly, and I'm not really interested in other people, because we built this country. We built this country, and we built a lot of colleges that people don't want us to even attend. Mm. So, and I noticed something that is very, very it hurts me to my heart. When I hear younger people say, well, you know, I don't want to have affirmative action because I can get this on my own. Well, yeah, you can get it on your own, but if people had been fair, you wouldn't need affirmative action. And it's almost as if they're thrown into some sort of guilt trip. Like, they have to explain themselves. You don't have to explain anything. If anything, you should be able to go to college for free, and you should be able to go to any school of your choice.
Yeah, but see, Deborah,
without giggling and being nervous, without having nervous laughter, and saying but this and but that. See, when you come to the table like that, people are going to treat you like that. When you come to the table and you mean what you say, then maybe you might get what you ask for. Not saying you're going to, but you might get what you're asked for.
Deborah, hey, I agree with you 100%. And as always, I appreciate your call. And I'm glad that the phones are back open so we can hear from you again.
Yeah. Have a good day.
Hey, you too, Deborah. Mm-hmm. She makes
real good points.
Yeah. And I think for me, what's hurtful is that when someone says we shouldn't have affirmative action, it lands on me as being dismissive of our history.
Exactly.
And to me, the conversation should be, man, we have oppressed both individually and as institutions and as a culture folks based on their race and obviously based on some other things too, how do we rectify that? And so to me, when folks are dismissive of affirmative action, they're dismissive of like how we got here. And to me, that is unacceptable. And so to me, the conversation should be, well, if not affirmative action, what? Because we got some affirming to do from how we got here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I heard something earlier this week where, you know, someone was really, I can't remember exactly who said it, but it was really about the difference in the setup and how the setup manifests into the outcome, right? And when you think about it, if you come from a background that has been systematically oppressed, then your parents actually can't teach you the same things that other people's parents can teach you. You know what I mean? In terms of how to set up your money and how to go about things. And even, you know, their parents' parents went to this school. So now you're a legacy student. The proportion of people of color who have parents that are able to set them up like that is disproportionately low due to the oppression that people of color have faced for generations.
Yes. It's like folks want us to run the race on get set, on your mark, go, knowing that they already have a head start.
Exactly.
And it's like, so no, the race isn't fair. You got a head start.
Exactly. And it's like, just because you've had a head start for 50 years, and now, at least on the optics, there's some people of color who have achieved a certain level of success, then all of a sudden you want to say that all of us are now magically on equal footing thanks to time. And that's not like, time is what has given you guys the power, basically. Yeah.
I will say, though, historically, when we've been given the chance to actually have equal opportunity, and I use sports as a great example, which used to be segregated, we show up and we show out.
Second that.
So I'd be a little nervous about that too, actually. But give us equal opportunity, and then let's see where things fall out. And Deborah mentioned that there's some colleges that we built that we have trouble even getting into or having access to. There's a college that might be trying to do something about that.
Which one?
Georgetown, the Hoyas University.
Oh, wow. What are they doing?
So folks may not know their history, but they were founded and run by Jesuit priests back in 1789 when they were founded. And they had plantations in Maryland, and they used to use the sale of produce and slaves to finance the operations of Georgetown University.
Wow.
Yeah. So Deborah makes the point that there's some schools that were built by slavery. This is an example of that isn't just hearsay or just hyperbole or like, oh, you know, just because there were slaves, they probably built, like in Georgetown's case, part of their operations, the reason why they're still here today, part of their journey was leveraging plantations and the sale of slaves to finance their university.
So the Hoyas?
The Hoyas.
The A3s? Where Ivy? Isn't that where Iverson went?
Yeah. Shout out to AI to answer. Yes, Georgetown. I mean,
why are you enlightening me with these type of statistics, though?
I'm just saying. I give folks some perspective. That sale of the plantation and the slaves in 1838 that helped keep them going into the 1800s and beyond, that sale would be the equivalent of them making a sale of something worth, in today's dollars, $3.3 million.
Okay.
Yeah. And so Georgetown has now, I would say, acknowledge that this happened and is now trying to do something to make up for that.
Okay.
And they are actually starting to award preferential status in admissions process to descendants of the slaves whose labor benefited Georgetown.
So how can you find that out? Like, is that an ancestry.com or?
Well, I think that's also part of the challenge to this.
Because exactly. Like slaves don't know where they come from.
It's a step in the right direction. But so let me say, they also offered an apology. They're also creating an institute for study of slavery on their campus. And they also are renaming some of the buildings in the spirit of some of the African-Americans who were a part of their history. Now, to your point, there's some challenges. How do you even find these people?
Yeah.
They're also not offering any economic incentive to the folks who fit this criteria who might be let into their university, but they are at least acknowledging it.
Oh, so it's not like you get a scholarship. It's not like you get to go to school for free.
No, you get preferential admission
Oh.
status.
Oh, that, well, that, okay.
I'm just saying.
No, I heard it wrong. That's
See, you like Georgetown? Not enough. they started off good though, didn't they?
They did.
You like the story? Like, the story,
oh, you
sounded,
get a scholarship.
You were like, oh man, they sold some slaves. They admitted what happened. Yeah. Like, they are the model for all colleges. And then you're like, but what? So yes, the outreach to descendants is still an issue. The descendants weren't even found to be part of the recommendation. There's no scholarships involved. So yeah, there's some.
Yeah. I'd like to, we have a Facebook Live comment and I'd love to get your perspective on it.
Okay.
Joseph John says, affirmative action is a farce and disenfranchises the minority.
Disenfranchises
the minority.
No, so I would say I.
He also says, as a follow-up, why apologize for things that happened over 150 years ago? I'm going to assume this is not a person of color.
I think that is well, no, you know what? Hey, you might think that Ben Carson's not a person of color. I'm not going to make assumptions about what race or gender that someone is based on their ideology or their belief system. Now, with that, when we don't apologize for things or acknowledge them, then they linger. The effects of them continue to go on. We may start acting in a certain way that continues to make the problem worse.
Yes.
I think of, and I love sports because to me, it's one of the places where we've actually seen a meritocracy for the most part, except for Colin Kaepernick, that it can work. And football, historically a sport played by African-Americans today, was having trouble getting African-Americans in management positions like being coaches. And so they instituted what was called the Rooney Rule, where if a coaching vacancy happened, the NFL, the owners of that team were required not to hire an African-American, but to interview at least one African-American. Again, why? Taking affirmative steps to make up for things that have been part of the culture or the institution and to allow equal opportunity, not equal outcomes. And so I am a big fan of an example of that is an affirmative step. And it doesn't actually do hurt or harm to the minority. In that case, you get the best of the best, actually, in the example of the Rooney Rule. Like, you have to be darn near Obama to be the one African-American who gets that slot to get the interview, just in case they might actually say yes and you get that job.
Have to be twice as good.
Yes. So that, to me, that's an example of, again, equality of opportunity, not equality of outcomes. And that's actually all I'm asking for. And I think affirmative action asks for too. It doesn't say affirmative get a degree. It says, hey, ability to get access to being in the university, to then get a higher education, and whatever happens, happens.
I agree with you.
Yes. All right. So all this would be, you know, kind of circum what? Say it to the
circum. Circumlocuting, talking in circles.
It would be talking in circles because affirmative action is still the law of the land. Quotas are not acceptable, but using race as criteria to admit people in college is. But then we started hustling backwards this week.
What happened?
The DOJ.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
You know, Donald Trump wanted to get rid of this dude, but I'm like, Jeff Beauregard Sessions is potentially the most hardest working Trump cabinet member, efficient, effective guy he has on his team.
And when you talk about furthering an agenda.
I mean, I didn't say it was the agenda I wanted. I'm just saying that he's furthering it, though.
He's furthering an agenda.
He's making America great again.
I'm going to let you go on because I don't.
So Jeff Beauregard Sessions in the Department of Justice, the DOJ, it was reported that there's been internal conversations that they are going to up their civil rights actions and start getting more aggressive to make sure civil rights aren't violated in the United States.
I see you smiling for people who can't see on Facebook Live. I want to know whose civil rights are they fighting for exactly?
The word is that they want to make sure that white Americans and Asian Americans aren't getting discriminated against because of affirmative action policies.
Okay.
They want to make sure that white folks and Asian Americans are not being discriminated against. So they were going to take.
So did they put Asian? Was the Asian Americans always in there, or was the like, so, is this reverse racism? Because I know that there's a lot of racism towards Asian Americans as well. So is this reverse, or I'm just curious.
It's interesting you ask that question, because there's been debate, and I'll give you both sides before I give you my opinion, which is some people believe whenever the DOJ, and normally historically it's been when there's been Republicans in the office, go after this idea of we don't want Asian Americans discriminated against, that oftentimes it's a more diplomatic way of going after that white Americans aren't discriminated against. Because oftentimes, it's at least related to college admissions, you could argue based on single criteria of, let's say, grades or SAT scores, if you were only doing those as criteria, which I hate to break it to folks out there, that's not the only criteria. But if you were, you could argue that Asian Americans are discriminated against and are disproportionately rejected based on their SAT scores and GPAs.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying it's an example that grades are not the only determining factor to your ability to be in a university and be productive there too. So it's a fair question. And so some people believe that this is just another way to eventually take a run at making affirmative action no longer legal in the United States.
Well, Daryl has commented and he says Sessions has to work quick. He probably won't be in office for long if or when Trump gets indicted.
I mean, we'll see. If Mike Pence takes over, I'm sure Jeff Sessions will still have a job.
We'll still have a job.
Yeah.
And shout out to Kirsten. Kirsten's tuning in and she says, we still vitally need to work to level the playing field.
Yes. And it's okay for race to be one of the factors in determining who gets into college. Not even okay. It's still needed.
Given the context of how the U.S. has been set up.
Yeah, we're only 50 years removed from segregation.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I'm just saying, if that wasn't a factor in general, would that principle be okay? I'm not sure. I'm just saying in the context of America.
Well, I think.
Because then people could argue the other side of that coin.
I think the football thing is a great example. Whenever you have an ecosystem that has disproportionately not represented the people who are part of it and not given them opportunity, that you need to take affirmative steps to make sure that there's equal opportunity.
Yeah. Context is key.
Yeah. And so the NFL is like a smaller context of like, oh, the reason why they have the Rooney Rule and an African-American coach should get to interview is because why? Because historically the league's been dominated by African-Americans and they don't go on to become coaches.
Exactly.
Contextually, it was needed. And I'm glad
context.
To have it. Yes. So we're going to take a quick break and then back with more underdog stuff, Hustle and Flow Part 2.
Cool.
Welcome back to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast that we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem.
You.
Joined in studio by Asha Davis.
Hi.
And Marlon, a.k.a. M.Dot on the ones and twos. And we're talking Hustle and Flow Part Duh.
Part Duh.
Dose. Two.
I was trying to remember how to say it in Russian and I can't.
Yeah, see. And and how can you not know some Russian these days?
Right, exactly.
This is a Russian-American America, supposedly. Yeah. All right. We've been talking unavoidable. And this week, race was unavoidable.
Really, really was.
It was. It was affirmative action unavoidable. And shout out to all the comments so far on Facebook.
Exactly.
It's my understanding there's a lively conversation going on right now.
A little bit of a heated debate going on right now.
I'm glad that folks can talk to one another. That's one of the first steps, right?
Yeah. And speaking of people standing up for race.
Yes. Colin Kaepernick.
Cap
in the building. Cap is, in my opinion, some unfinished business.
Yes. We talked a little about that last week.
Yes. It seems that there are ex-NFL players who are hustling backwards and giving Colin Kaepernick some advice. Every week, it seems.
Yeah.
First, there was Michael Vick giving Colin Kaepernick some advice. Let's go to Colin Kaepernick. I mean, Michael Vick giving Colin Kaepernick some advice.
Hey, Hey, first thing you got to get Colin to do is cut his hair. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not up here to try to be politically correct, but, you know, even if he puts cornrows in it, I don't think he should represent himself, you know, in that way in terms of, you know, just the hairstyle. Just go clean cut. You know, why not? You know, you're already dealing with a lot of controversy surrounding this issue.
That's a fascinating thing to hear you say, Mike.
If it wasn't for the fact that Michael Vick said something outrageous to start the interview, that last part of Michael teacup in hand Whitlock.
Oh, gosh.
Saying it's fascinating. Yeah, it was fascinating and out of line and unacceptable. But that's Michael Vick. And you would have thought, that sucks, but nobody else would come out and say anything so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But here comes
Ray Ray.
Ray Ray.
Ray Ray.
Ray Lewis, who is a former member of the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Known as one of the great middle linebackers of all time.
And also has a video more famous than Kim's tape.
Oh, see, I thought you were about to talk about the whole limo gunshots and...
Oh, no, I was talking about the skeet down.
Well, let's hear from Ray. So Ray, you would think Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Also a member of the Baltimore Ravens,
yeah,
who have been speculated as considering Colin Kaepernick to be on their quarterback roster.
Are they?
Yes, given that their quarterback Joe Flacco is currently injured,
mm-hmm,
and they brought Colin Kaepernick in. So it makes sense that Ray would be brought into the conversation because Ray is a confidant or consultant to the Baltimore Ravens.
I'm going to not agree that it makes sense for Ray to be brought into the conversation, but let's play the clip.
Once you hear what he says, it may not be fair, but at first glance, it's like, oh, I get it. And then it's like, oh, I wish they wouldn't talk to him. Let's play that first Ray clip.
How crazy is I'm just leaving set at Fox and got all of these texts and stuff about all of this Colin Kaepernick stuff and all this stuff. Let me explain something to you guys. I'm going to be very simple with this. While a bunch of people are talking about this man, Cap, let me tell you something, brother. I pray for you more than you ever can imagine. All right? Your name is in my Bible. That God gives you the vision that you did. I applaud you for the things that you stood up for. My brother, everybody else can speak for you, but until you speak for yourself and demand what you want to do in life, it's totally on you. But it's almost crazy that you see.
Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
First of all, does he really have Colin Kaepernick's name in his Bible?
He said he has Cap's name in his Bible. So, I mean, that means that the pastor could have said, write down 10 names of people you want to pray for.
So maybe just because I haven't been to church in a little while, maybe I forgot about that part. But it just comes. So he had me in the first couple minutes where he said, I'm just going to pray for him. I wish Ray would have stopped there and just like literally just prayed for him and kept it moving.
Right.
But instead, Ray had more to say.
Man to man, brother, I ain't got nothing against you. I wish you the best in life. I hope you chase whatever God got for you to chase. All right. And once again, I applaud what you stood up for because I'm in the streets every day. So while people talking about what's this and why Ray said this, why Ray said that, Ray ain't saying nothing. And if people really want to help you, if they really want to help you, man, they'll pray for you, brother. Alright? They'll lead you the right way and stop encouraging you to be caught up in some of this nonsense. The battles you fighting, brother, people way before has been fighting these for many, many, many years. And that's why I take each and every one of these kids, and that's why I take them away from their environments and give them something else to see in life. And that's why I played the way I played. The football field is our sanctuary. If you do nothing else, young man, get back on.
Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
Telling Colin Kaepernick to just play football.
Just play football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be out in the community like me, humble brag, later.
That's terrible.
But wait, there's more.
Oh, gosh.
Some closing thoughts from Ray.
Okay.
The football field is our sanctuary. If you do nothing else, young man, get back on the football field and let your play speak for itself. And what you do off the field, don't let too many people know, because they're going to judge you anyway, no matter what you do, no matter if it's good or bad. All right? Cap, be good. Take care of yourself. Brother for life. A lot of people talking for you. A lot of people got your back. Take care of yourself. Peace.
Brother for life.
Yeah, if only I had more brothers like Ray Lewis, who would tell me to don't let people know what you're up to.
Oh, gosh.
Especially when you're up to helping the community.
Right.
Keep that to yourself.
Right.
Just get back on the football field.
Right.
Just shut up and play.
Right.
Because if you do that, maybe I'll tell the Baltimore Ravens to hire you as a quarterback. Because I got your name in my Bible.
Man.
See, this is my... Ray says, Cap, don't listen to everybody. I wish they would stop giving you advice and they would just pray for you. Well, I wish Ray would have just prayed for Colin Kaepernick and kept his advice to himself.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, Ray Lewis isn't the only ex-NFL player telling Colin Kaepernick to keep quiet, shut up, and just play football. Cordell Stewart.
Cordell from the Pittsburgh Steelers? Isn't that your state?
Yes. Pennsylvania is my state. Pittsburgh is in my state of Pennsylvania.
I was a Steelers fan. Well, I am a Steelers fan. I really liked Cordell Stewart when he was playing. What did he say?
He offered some advice to Colin Kaepernick to also just kind of, you know, be quiet.
Oh, that's terrible.
I think what troubles me so much about this story is why this is hustling backwards to me. I know Ray Lewis. I know Cordell Stewart, black men. I'm going to guess that at some point they felt uncomfortable around police or have run-ins with police or know somebody in their family or in their neighborhoods that has had uncomfortable run-ins with the police. Colin Kaepernick speaks up about it, and they're like, yo, bro, psst, keep quiet about that. And then maybe they'll give you a job back. Because you did everything legally and peacefully, but we don't want no drama. It's okay when we get charged for attempted murder, or we have a dog ring, or we get a DUI. We just acting up. Kind of like how we've been seen. But as long as we get out there and play hard, they're okay with that. But they used to kill slaves for reading. I guess they don't like it when folks talk out loud. But if the owners were to come out and say that, well, they know that'd be bad PR. But they were able to find Cordell Stewart, Ray Lewis, and Michael Vick.
Wow. I mean, but shout out to Sherman from the Seattle Seahawks.
Richard Sherman.
Who did stand up for Colin Kaepernick, who basically Sherman is saying what everybody's thinking, that, you know, there are, Cap is better than a number of quarterbacks out there that have already been signed or that are out there. And he definitely is being discriminated against because of the actions that he took to bring to light injustices that are being out there. And he should not be in the same category as people that have blatantly broken the law. You know, he didn't do anything wrong. All he did was silently stand up for people who don't have a voice.
Yeah. And on top of that, been putting his money where his mouth is too, doing things in the community, making donations. And so also in that clip from Ray Lewis, you may have heard him say he should speak for himself and let people know that he wants to play football.
Yep.
Well, I don't know if you guys heard, but did you hear about what happened in Miami this week? Mm-hmm. To the Dolphins? Ryan Tannehill, their starting QB, went down in practice, which I think it may be a season and an injury. And guess who Miami is thinking about going to get as a quarterback?
Who?
Jay Cutler and Tony Romo.
Oh, two people that are retired.
Yeah, and have signed contracts to be broadcasters. They weren't letting anybody know that they wanted to play football.
Right.
But somehow Miami is considering them. So stop with the BS about Colin needs to come out and tell people he wants to play football. He's 29. He played last season. He's interviewed with Baltimore and Seattle. He doesn't have to tell anybody he wants to play football. Just like I see that Tony Romo and Jay Cutler didn't have to tell anybody they wanted to play football.
No.
And so hopefully Colin will get a job. But I will say the reason why this is so disturbing to me is Colin had the right to do what he did. The owners actually have the right to do what they're doing right now. But, and I know as an English major, you'll appreciate this word, but this is a precedent setting moment.
Exactly.
And underdogs, what I don't want to see happen is that the precedent is set that if someone speaks out about a cause peacefully and legally that may be polarizing, mm-hmm. that person doesn't get to work again.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a good precedent to set.
I think Sherman really said it best when he said, this isn't about football or color. This is about boy, stay in your place.
And there's no way that I want that to be the precedent.
Nah.
So, you know, with that, I am pushing for and rooting for Colin Kaepernick to get signed. I do have a prediction, though. I do think he will get signed.
I hope so.
Unfortunately, I think it'll be somewhat in the context of the owner sending a message. And then what will happen is a quarterback will go down sometime in the preseason or during the season. And the owners will look at winning and wanting to make their money. And someone will sign him out of desperation. And he'll end up being a quarterback in the NFL again.
Mm.
Not the way I would want it to go down, but I do think he will play again. And between now and then, my wish is that players will stop giving him advice to be quiet and stay silent.
Please never stay silent. We say that on this show all the time. Whenever you see an injustice, be the voice that makes it the change in this world.
Yeah. And one other thing, too, the reason why I'm also proud of what Colin's doing right now and folks like Richard Sherman speaking up is that I don't know about you, but I've been in situations before where I've been silent.
Exactly.
And because I'm like, yo, I don't want to lose this job or I don't want to mess with my check or I got this mortgage to pay. And so I've been there. Right. It's real. Sometimes mm-hmm. the choice between I don't want to ruffle no feathers because I'm trying to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pain you feel on the inside about being silent about things that you know that just don't feel right or look right.
Exactly.
And so whenever someone leans in and risks what they have, and whether you think that, oh, it's not a risk because he's a millionaire, still, risk or risk, right? There's the social risk, the shame. There's the risk of, like, you not getting to do what you dream and love doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applaud when people lean in and take risks to stand up. And especially when they're standing up for underdogs. So shout out to them. And I wish that as life goes on and those opportunities get presented to me, that I look forward to taking a stand regardless of what the repercussions may be.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more underdog stuff. Hustle and Flow, part two, part duh, part duh, dose.
Part dose.
After this music break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff. We have a caller. I know we're coming up on station ID, but let's get this caller in before we go back to another break. Name and where you're calling from. It's ringing again, it looks like, on the other line. Name and where you're calling from. Well, it sounds like someone wants to talk about Colin Kaepernick, and they are trying to get in on the line, and MDOT is holding it down, and the phone line is ringing. And shout out to folks who are listening on Facebook Live at facebook.com/GregoryNeesmith, or if you're tuning in online with the audio stream on WHCR.org. And shout out to folks who are riding around in New York City on this beautiful Sunday, listening to 90.3 FM.
Deborah from Manhattan.
Yes, your question and comment.
Hi, regarding Kat, with Vic, I felt when they let him play ball again, the first time I heard about what he did with the dog, I said, "Wow, okay," but I would never want him to date my daughter, because there's something like not wired properly in his head, okay? And the only reason why I really wanted to see him play ball again is because a person like that who walks the streets with nothing to do could be very dangerous to a person. Cap, on the other hand, he did nothing wrong.
No.
So, you know, no one has gone. You know what bothers me is, like, we do all this talking and you have a microphone and other people have microphones, but no one ever steps up to the plate to want to give him an interview and really ask questions that need to be asked of him. You know, like, who is going to pay you this much money to do this? Because, you know, this is nothing new. I mean, they used to do this to Malcolm. You know, they pull out, dial up a Negro, and then let him stand next to him and say what they want him to say. So this is nothing new in terms of historical facts. Yep. But no one has ever come after Vic and asked him, why would you say something like that?
No, I think it's a good point. And, you know, Vic did come back out and apologize, but I don't know if he ever answered.
Too late. He's already thrown it. And he probably got so much crap on his Facebook and Twitter that he said, you know what, I better do this. But it's too late. And he's never going to be, people are always going to remember him for that. You know, at least with the dogs, after a certain amount of years went by, people said, look, give the guy a break, let him play football, and let him go on about his business, okay? He's playing, he's doing well, leave him alone. But now he had to pull this out. Yep. No. Mm-mm.
No, hey, I totally
hear you. You can't keep forgiving people, and that's our problem. We always forgive people for the wrong reason. And as for this other guy with his Bible, he can take his Bible and he can go as far as he wants. I'm always nervous when someone would get on a sports show and tell me that he's praying for me. Really?
Hey, Deborah, I can't say I disagree with the, it felt a little inauthentic to me, but I think.
And I believe in God.
Hey, I do.
But don't tell me about your Bible. Just don't do that. Because it's a revised version anyway. Don't tell me about your Bible.
And as we all,
I think that's despicable. And nobody ever comes after these quote unquote brothers and says, what's up with this?
Well, we believe that they are out of line over here. So, and as we all know, right, you can't trust all the messengers out there.
No, you can't.
Deborah,
have a great day.
Hey, you too. Appreciate you. We're coming up on a station ID and a quick music break, and then back with more Underdog stuff. And shout out to Deborah for calling in and letting us know how she feels about what's going on in the unavoidable and unfinished news stories of the week. More Underdog stuff after this station ID and quick music break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff. Today's show, Hustle and Flow Part 2.
Part 2.
And it's summer hours.
Yeah.
And we're in the bonus hour of the show. I love summer hours.
Yeah, I like them too.
It's nice to be able to hang out with the underdogs for 1 to 3 instead of 1 to 2.
It's like a fun brunch date.
Yes. And on top of that, when we get the bonus hours, that means I get to be back on the ones and twos.
Okay, I think ones and twos refers to like an actual DJ, like mixing, like.
Why are you crushing my?
I mean, the board is just the up and down of some levers.
Just So we gonna switch places?
Nah.
I didn't think so. So shout out to all the folks watching on Facebook Live who can actually see that Ash and I have now maneuvered ourselves into different positions in the studio.
Yeah.
And shout out to Marlon for holding it down on the ones and twos.
For the first hour of two.
Yes. Yes. And shout out to all the underdogs who've come along now for the bonus hour. We had at least one, I believe, comment related to the unfinished business story of the week, which was folks talking about Colin Kaepernick, that he needs to be quiet so he can get a job in the NFL.
Yeah. So Daryl says Cutler can get a job after he's retired, but Cap can't get a job. He thinks that's disgraceful. He thinks Cap is 100 times the leader that Cutler will ever be. And saying that Cap was voted the leadership award twice by his teammates, whereas Cutler couldn't lead a bunch of first graders to recess. Shaking his head. He says Cutler couldn't lead first graders to recess. That's I don't know who's trying to be the comedian here, me or Daryl.
I mean, you might have to share some of your jokes in the news to let Daryl know who's the comedy writer and who's the commentator.
All right. Maybe later.
Was that a tease? Like, you might.
I got some jokes.
Okay. Daryl's like, I got some jokes too now.
I got some jokes.
Shout out to Daryl Tillman and all the underdogs who are coming along for the ride today. Appreciate you. And shout out to my hometown of the city of brotherly love and Mount Airy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Under the week.
Yeah.
And still to come in the second hour. Under the week, about to happen right now. Then we're going to do a little bit of journey of the underdog. I'm going to talk about some personal stuff going on with my journey as an underdog and an entrepreneur. And then we'll do word association game and end the hour with uninhibited Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
The under the week. Now, when I saw this headline,
I had to do a double take.
I thought it was fake news, to be honest.
I definitely was like, say, what now, Willis?
Yeah, what you talking about?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shout out to Different Strokes. I remember I used to do a show called Dudes of Disruption.
D.O.D.
D.O.D. And at one point, Nick, who was one of the founders and co-hosts, goes, what you talking about, Willis? And then literally somebody was like, his name, who you calling Willis? Because folks didn't get the reference. But underdogs know what you talking about, Willis.
Yeah.
All right. So, Asha, let them know, what was the, tell them the headline first before you tell them the, what was the headline?
The NAACP issues a travel advisory.
To what country?
To America, to the state of Missouri.
To the show me state?
To the show me. So the NAACP said, Black people, take caution if you're going to Missouri.
What?
It was an actual travel advisory by the NAACP.
Are you what publication did you read that in?
Time magazine. So this was not the Farrakhan paper in Harlem that gets delivered.
Nothing against.
No, but I just mean it's not like the community news. They're
gonna be outside the door picking it.
No. I'm a fan. I buy it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought you were throwing shade.
No. I'm just saying it made it all the way to Time because I'm sure they've issued travel advisories. Okay. I apologize. Please don't.
Yeah. You know, we, it's nothing but love. So you're saying to me that there's a travel advisory to the show me state, Missouri.
Here's a little more information. The advisory aims to make visitors to Missouri aware of a string of troubling events that have happened in the state. So in May, an African-American man died while being held in jail. He had never been arrested. Threats of violence and discrimination have gone unaddressed on school campuses. And in a 2016 report from the state attorney general's office, it was found that African Americans were stopped by traffic officers. I'm going to give you a chance. Guess how many more percent times more often than Caucasian drivers? What is your first guess?
My first guess, though, they didn't percentage.
They didn't percentage.
So double would be 100%. So I'm going to say 235%.
You know what? I shouldn't ask you that. So African Americans were stopped by traffic officers 75% more often than Caucasian drivers. So basically, if 3 out of 4 black people are stopped, then that means that 1 out of 4 white people are stopped, which is basically what that means.
Yes,
right? So this is basically at a rate that is disproportionate to their makeup in the state's population. So that's the reason.
Whoa. And the Missouri NAACP did this, or it was the national one, or it doesn't say in the article.
No, it's just the NAACP in general. Yes. So he basically said that they basically said it is part of the NAACP's duty to call attention to what they see as increased discrimination in the state. And it was the Missouri NAACP, but it is sort of
it's sanctioned. Approved by
the
national.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, because obviously Missouri is where Philando Castile is from as well.
Well, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
But the football players at the University of Missouri did do a boycott and eventually got the president of the university removed or resigned because of some racial issues that were going on there. So there has been also some stuff in the national news about what's been going on with Missouri and the Show Me State.
And it's Ferguson.
Yes, obviously. And then
obviously.
Yeah, from what went on there with Mr. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, part of me is like, you could issue if that's all it took to get the warning, then there's several states and or cities that I'm sure mirror those statistics and some of those types of incidences. I think it's good for folks to be aware of the things that have been going on in that community and in that state. And it's still a shock to me that in 2017 that it would be so egregious that they would feel that they need to actually offer a travel warning.
I mean, there was some precedent for civil rights organizations taking this type of precaution. So also in May, the ACLU issued an alert for Texas, which basically was in response to the passage of a state law that allowed police officers to examine the immigration status of people stopped for traffic violations. So, you know, that's along the lines of what's going on with ICE right now.
You know, you could argue that for several different groups of underdogs, that Texas might be a place that there should be a travel warning. They've been known to be aggressive around limiting access to abortions. They've been aggressive on rolling back voting rights acts. Clearly, it sounds like there's been some other stuff related to policing.
Mm.
I mean, there should probably be some organizations issuing a potential travel warning or residency warning to living in the state of Texas.
I mean, one of our Facebook viewers, Joseph, says, what about issuing a travel ban to Chicago?
Hey.
I'm guessing, I don't know what ethnicity or if it would be an ethnic.
Well, I mean, I'm going to assume he's referring to, well, there's two things that you could issue a warning related to. Obviously, there's been a lot of murders and violent crimes going on in Chicago, especially on the south side of Chicago. And in addition, Chicago is notoriously known for being one of the more corrupt towns related to politics, along with the whole place of Illinois. So on both those measures, you could potentially issue a warning to be mindful of maybe Chicago's not the city for you. There could be warnings for a lot of towns and states in our great United States of America.
And just to sort of set further ground for the travel ban to Missouri, it was in response to Senate Bill 43, which was just passed this past June, in which basically a bill was passed in the state that essentially raises the legal burden required to sue businesses for discrimination on the basis of race, religion, or gender, but to no avail. Like, basically, that was it. So NAACP, ACLU, a lot of organizations were protesting this bill, and it still passed. And so basically, it's given all of these things, you know, now all of a sudden, these organizations, these government bodies can feel more comfortable, potentially, to discriminate based on the basis of race, because the legal burden required to take action against them for such actions has been increased. So they are no longer as liable to suffer repercussions for these actions as they may once have been.
Yeah, I get why now that they issued that warning. And yeah, it's under the week because it's unfortunate that folks would feel that it's gotten to that point where they need to call them out to such this level.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's completely terrifying if you ask me.
Yeah, and there's probably a number of states and or cities that there could be some type of ban issued for a lot of different underdog groups.
So speaking of underdogs and speaking about, you know, what it takes to make it as an underdog in the world, I feel like this would probably be a good time to start thinking about some coaching tips.
I totally agree. So we're going to take one quick music break and then come back with Journey of an Underdog. More underdog stuff, Hustle and Flow, part two after this break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff. We do this every weekend on Sunday.
Yeah.
At WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
Recorded live.
Live.
Because life happens live.
Life, everything happens live. You live live.
Yes. Although, shout out to the folks who will be listening to this as a podcast.
Yeah, but at least they know it's being, you know, there's no, whatever we say is being said in the moment.
What happens, happens.
Yeah.
And we appreciate that because by doing it live, we have folks like Deborah who get to call in.
Mm-hmm.
And you can join the conversation at 212-650-6903. That's 212-650-6903. Or because it happens live, there's folks that come along for the journey every week on Facebook Live at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith.
Shout out to Daryl, who says, you know, coming, talking about our last topic where we were talking about the NAACP's at travel advisory for people of color to the state of Missouri. Daryl says, Black folks who are being unjustly stopped should file complaints to the internal affairs departments of the respective police departments.
I see what he did there. Did you see the use of the N-word?
Unjustly?
I saw what he did there. Good message and good use of an N-word.
And I think, you know, his point of having those outlets to file repercussions when those discriminations actually occur, I think that's why the NAACP issued that advisory in Missouri, because those outlets to spark those repercussions are severely becoming harder and harder to fulfill.
Yeah. Great. Shout out to Daryl Tillman. Appreciate you coming on along the journey with us this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hustle and flow.
Yeah.
We've talked politics.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked culture.
Yeah.
We haven't talked personal life yet.
I would love to hear some personal stuff.
Well, I'm going to do some sharing today.
That'd be awesome.
I am on a journey of an underdog, too.
Mm-hmm.
And especially going from my corporate career to now being a full-time entrepreneur, I'm, you know, a startup looking to make it happen. And I wanted to share some about right before leaving my job, share about the early years, like literally the first year of me making the transition. And then we'll fast forward to some stuff that literally was going on this week that had me all in my feelings.
Awesome.
And emotional. All right. One of the hardest things to do for me was getting ready to leave my job.
Yeah.
It can be emotional. And I don't know about whether you've ever had those thoughts or you out there listening, but I know one of the things that had me very stuck before leaving was money.
Was money. You don't want to give that up.
I was, you know, I was, they were paying me.
We all know what you were making, Gregory. Quarter mil.
Yeah, you know, I was, when they started saying they were going to tax people over $250,000 when Obama was in office, I was like, yo, you need to stay out of my pocket, son.
Right.
Otherwise, I was with them on almost everything except for that. But I say that jokingly. But seriously, though, I was making good money. And regardless of how much money you are making, to potentially leave that behind for uncertainty and less of it is a big deal.
Yeah.
So it got me to thinking about reminiscing what it was like back then. And I came across a quick video from one of my friends who's also a host here on WATR and a financial motivator, who talks about one of the things you get to do to get ready for leaving your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm talking about Ash Cash himself. And he's a host on WACR 90.3 FM on Friday evenings and just an all around good dude. And he talks about one of the things you need to do financially to get ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to share that quick clip and then talk about how that related to my journey of starting to get ready to leave my job.
I'm Ash Cash, and this is my two cents. So there's always a lot of talk about being an entrepreneur versus having a 9-to-5, as if having both is a disease or a curse. Well, here's my two cents. If you don't have a f*** you fund, then you better keep that 9-to-5. What is a f*** you fund, you may ask? Well, some people call it an emergency fund. Some people call it a financial freedom fund. Well, I'm calling it a f*** you fund, meaning that when it's time to tell the 9-to-5 that it is time for you to go, you can say, hey, you know what? You, I have this fund. You have to have the f you fund. In order to do that, you have to make money. Being an entrepreneur is not as glamorous as it may seem. A lot of people post pictures on Instagram, on Facebook, brag about it on Twitter. I can tell you, being an entrepreneur requires some capital, some blood, some sweat and tears, and maybe your firstborn. So make sure that you have the capital in order for you to do your venture the right way. So make sure you invest in a you fund. Instead of looking at that 9-to-5 as a thing that's holding you back from being an entrepreneur, look at it as something that's going to help you tell your job. Go ahead, say it with me. You make sure you save at least 6 to 8 months of expenses in an account, so that way you know when you take that full leap into entrepreneurship, you can manage your expenses at least 6 to 8 months. I am Ash Cash. This is my two cents.
Asha Davis.
Yeah.
Do you have your FU fund?
I think with more money comes more problems. So your fund may change. So right now, what it's going to take to sustain my lifestyle without a paycheck for 8 months. No, I do not have that.
But you're working on it.
I'm working on it, but that would cut into my retirement savings. So it's like that fund has to exist separate from a 401k.
Got it. I hear you. And I was back in the summer of 2014 figuring out how to get my fund together, so mm-hmm. to speak. And the one thing I want to say to folks is that when it comes to money considerations, one of our biggest and one of my biggest considerations was like, yo, it costs a lot to have an apartment.
Right? Well, exactly.
The roof over your head. Like, I don't know about other people's expenses, but I remember back then in 2014, when I looked at all the things that I spent money on, the thing that cost the most was literally having a roof over my head.
Exactly.
And so what I want to say to folks is that you get to be creative around your living situation and your finances.
Exactly.
When I first moved to New York, this is a while ago, but I lived in a room rental to save money. And I know there's a lot of people who do stuff like, well, I don't want to be a landlord, or I don't want to have roommates, or I don't want to live with my parents, or I don't want to live with my brothers or sisters. Well, guess what? I didn't want to live in Bayonne, New Jersey, which is where I lived right before I left my job. Why? Because I bought a house that allowed me to both live there, but also have tenants. And so I did stuff like become a landlord, which I didn't want to be one. Bayonne, didn't want to live there. But my commitment to wanting to leave my job ended up outweighing some of the burdens or obstacles of like doing some things with my living situation that would help me reduce my finances so I could go out there and do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know there's a lot of I don't want us related to living situations, but it's worth it to be creative around them so that you can reduce those costs as you get ready to leave.
Yeah.
Now, once I got the financial stuff taken care of, then I left. January 2015. No more Mondelez Craft Foods.
Wow.
I'm out on my own.
Yep, that's a big decision.
And do you think, what do you think it was like?
It was extremely terrifying.
That is a good point. And so I'm glad you said that as like the first thought, because some people were like, yo, man, you free. You living the life. Call your own shots. And those first 6 months or so, that wasn't necessarily the emotions that rose to the top during those first 6 months. Let me tell you some of the real emotions that rose to the top, because I want folks to know that if they're about to leave their job because they have their FU fund, or they rearrange their living situation to take care of their largest expense, whether that's live with your brothers or sisters, go stay with your parents, get some roommates, buy a multifamily, whatever you're going to do to get around your biggest expense, and then you take that leap, I want you to know that there might be some emotional days in the beginning. So a couple of emotions I felt. Uncomfort.
Mm-hmm.
There's something comfortable about knowing that you need to wake up a certain time every day. There's a certain drive or subway you take to work. You got roles and responsibilities, teammates, certain hours you're going to be there in the day. And it happens Monday through Friday and maybe a little bit on the weekends. And so there's this structure and flow that's gone once you become a full-time entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was uncomfortable with just literally, how do I structure my days? How do I flow? Speaking of hustle and flow, given that now it's up to me to figure that out. Secondly, doubt. You ever have some doubt?
Lots of times.
You have some doubt this week?
Right now.
Me too. Sometimes back then, and we'll fast forward to even now, but I used to doubt, did I make the right decision to leave my job?
Yep.
Am I doing it right?
Yep.
Am I going to get it right? Just this idea of, and we both work for big time corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use a sports analogy of this whole idea of where one of my biggest doubts and fears came from, which was they say in sports, sometimes a player is good because of the team he plays on, the structure of the organization, and the great system that they run. And so they call those folks system players, where it's like, yeah, they're great, but they're great because everything around them's great. And I was doubting, was Gregory great or was I a system player? Was I great because I was at a Fortune 100 company?
That's interesting.
Surrounded by money and resources that most people and companies don't have. And so was my greatness because of the system around me? Could I be great without that system? So I get it. Folks are wondering, man, what's it going to be like? Sure, I could do it when I was with a company, but can I do it on my own? So that was one of the doubts I had. And then lastly, I'd say part of the first 6 months or so was lots of explaining.
Lots of explaining to people to what, justify your decision or?
Yeah. People were like, how's it going? You making any money yet? You sure you did the right thing? What you doing today? Why are you taking a nap on Wednesday afternoon? You gonna make any money from doing that? You sure you did the right thing? You can always come back. And literally, I felt part of my first 6 months, I like had a full-time job of explaining to people why I did what I did. And at the same time, while I'm explaining it, oh, by the way, I'm uncomfortable and I'm doubting that I did the right thing on top of that.
I'm uncomfortable, dog. I don't know you.
Yes.
Yes. J fans, you get
yes,
it.
Yes, I will not lose ever. Although there's times where you don't feel that way. So I just wanted to share, like, those were some of the emotions that I was feeling in those first 6 months.
Yep.
And that it's okay if you feel uncomfort and doubt and some explaining to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say the one good thing about explaining is that each time I had to explain, it gave me an opportunity to get over the doubt or get over the uncomfort, or really even for me to question, like, am I truly committed to this? Did I make the right decision? And so there is a gift inside of it, but still, it was rough having to do all that explaining.
Well, it's interesting. Daryl comments and says, I think folks need to look at what they want versus what they need in a house specifically. You know, you talked about your home, your living space being sort of your biggest expense. And so he says, this is because once your house is paid off, your FU fund suddenly doesn't seem like that big of a leap. So instead of buying, you know, the more expensive house, why don't, instead of buying the $250,000 or $300,000 house, which I wish that that was an option in New York, I'd have a couple houses. Instead, buy the $125,000 home where can you buy a house for that price? But just pay it off in half the time. I mean, to be fair, my condo was $150,000 in Canada. So I guess it's possible in a universe, but when you're in New York, maybe if you're in Bayonne, New Jersey.
Hold on. See, now why?
There's nowhere in New York.
Hold on. Shout out to all the
folks.
That's
even in the highest prices here.
We might have people listening in Bayonne right now.
Okay. Well, congrats. They're smart then, because they don't mind the commute. But then Joseph says he quit his job to pursue his passion actually just a few days ago on July 27th, and he didn't have an FU fund.
Hey, that's leaning in. So a couple of things to address there from both of those comments. One is, I think Daryl makes a good point that when I think about the American culture,
yeah,
this whole idea of greed is good, or more, having things in excess.
Yes.
Oftentimes, we don't need as much as we've been sold that we should have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he makes a great point. Food actually comes to mind. Where, you ever been to Cheesecake Factory?
Yes.
Yo, the food that comes out on the plate,
yeah,
is enormous.
Yep.
And I think it's an analogy to what Daryl's saying about living too. We've become programmed to think like that is a normal meal.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, that isn't the portion size of a meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than you need.
Yep.
And just like you could cut back on the portions that you get at Cheesecake Factory, you can cut back on the portions of what you need to live in terms of living arrangement, square feet that are needed to be comfortable. And so I think he makes a great point. And then in terms of Joe talking about leaving without the FU fund, I mean, you know, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah.
And the thing I would say to folks is, when I say, you know, take that leap, I'm still talking about be responsible. So be responsible to yourself, your family, your friends. And I think oftentimes what we forget is that there's always support around.
Mm-hmm.
And think to yourself, what's the worst can happen? So even if someone left without an FU fund, I'm sure that there's family, friends, or someone that will help them with their living arrangement, or someone that'll help support them in what they're doing. But in the end, be responsible and go lean in and go take a chance. Now, that's all well and good, right?
You're right.
You get through all that stuff. The first, you got the FU fund. You've now gotten through the doubt, the discomfort. You're starting to get the hang of this entrepreneur thing.
Right.
It's feeling good. You're about a year or so in, you get a first win. You get your first client. You get your first customer. You get your first check. You're like, this is kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And then guess what? You hit a roadblock.
What's the roadblock?
The roadblock is, man, I've been doing this for a little while now, and it's not actually unfolding the way I plan or as quickly as I plan.
That feels like it's also the same in relationships.
That once you got over the uncomfort and the doubt.
Once you get over the, oh, it's nice to sort of be here, and then it's sort of like, okay, enough time has passed, and you're like, wait a minute, did I make the right decision?
Yo, you must have said something that now the phone line is as soon as you said relationship. Now imagine, I'm working the board, so somehow I'm going to try to put the caller on hold and keep talking all at the same time. And we'll see if I did that well. And then we're going to take a quick break, and I'll see who the caller is, and we'll also continue talking. But you hit the wall. So actually, while we take this break, I'm going to play some clips of something that happened to me this week. I actually hit the wall this week,
mm-hmm.
where I'm now about 2.5 years into the journey. And I had one of those weeks where I was just like, yo, am I doing this thing right? It takes a lot of effort and work to make this consulting company that I'm trying to make work, this coaching practice, this content creation, like this show, and also not getting paid in some instances at all and some not that much, and going, maybe I need to pivot.
Mm.
Maybe this thing isn't going to work out. Maybe it's been fun, but now it's time to be a grown up again.
That's really interesting. What a way to go to break.
Yeah. And so I'm going to play a clip of how I was feeling this week. And I recorded just in the moment, an 8-minute just sharing of how what I just said was coming to life in my spirit at the time. I'm going to play a clip of it. It's about 3 minutes or so. That'll be our break. We'll see who the caller is and we'll come back and I'll talk about that moment this week, and then also how I keep going and hopefully how you can keep going too if you're feeling some of those same emotions. Here's that clip and then more underdog stuff after this.
What's up, family, friends, underdogs out there? It's Gregory Neesmith with an impromptu recording. Unscripted. You know, I love the use of the unwords. And I was moved to record what I'm feeling right now. More of a note that I'm giving myself that I hope to look at years from now and hopefully admire and be proud of what I am about to say. I'm telling me as I'm looking at me in the camera, you're going to look back at this and say, I'm glad you kept going. And I'm going to keep going because of my why, my mission, fighting for underdogs to rediscover how special we are in the world, because I know, just like myself, there's other people out there that often feel like the odds are stacked against them to win. And my vision is that there are underdogs out there that have access to support and belief in themselves, that they can go from, and we can go from contender, from underdog to contender, from contender to champ. And then, hey, while we're dreaming big, we might as well go from champ to legends. And so, Gregory, when you look back at this year from now, damn, I'm glad you kept going, man. And so are the millions of underdogs out there that have gone from underdogs to contenders to champs to legends. Keep going. Your future self, and even your present self, and the people around you, gonna appreciate it. Whew, this thing went on for 8 minutes. August 3rd, 2017. I can't wait to look back at this in a few weeks.
And that's how I was feeling.
Yeah. That sounds like you needed a hug after that.
I did. And the cool thing is I got both literal hugs and some virtual hugs from friends, family, and other underdogs out there who listened to it, watched it, and gave me their encouragement and support.
That's awesome.
And I'll talk about that in reference to some things that have kept me going. So I think the point here is about lean in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm going to keep doing. So yeah. One of the ways that I am going to keep going, and I think for other folks who may have been feeling how I was feeling this week, and you said even you sometimes feel like that doubt, are three things. One, keep trusting yourself. I think deep down inside, I know that I'm on the right path, even when the hater inside of me tries to get me to question it. But I know, and I will continue to trust my inner voice, my spirit. Also, I'm going to keep getting my money right, because as much as it sounds great to go after my dreams and things like that, there's some realities in life, like being able to provide for yourself and or your family. So I always say, you know, keep your eye on your budget, organizing your finances, reaching out for support when you need it, living below your means. And then lastly, the part that you referenced, which is keep getting support. I am grateful for all the people who reached out to me this week, knowing that I was a little down, and their words of wisdom or just a pat on the back, or just as you put it, a hug, all made me feel much better and reminded me to keep going.
Keep keeping on.
Yes. Keep keeping on. With that, we're going to take a quick break, because when we come back, we got the big finish.
Yeah.
The show. More underdog stuff. Hustle and Flow part 2 after this break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff. Today's show, Hustle and Flow Part 2. Who's hustling forwards, backwards, or just circum something?
Circumlocuting, talking in circles.
Running in place.
Well, that's not what that specific word means. It means the locution part. It means to speak.
But so. I was giving folks another example.
Treading water.
Yeah, in case they didn't know what...
Okay, so...
All right. Shout out to... all the callers so far today, and folks following along on Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. And we just had a call from Tanya. Shout out to Tanya in Harlem.
Shout out to Tanya.
One of our underdog listeners. And her question during the break was, what do you do if you feel stuck in your job? You don't like your coworkers, stuff like that, and you just want to leave. Should you leave? Should you stay?
That's a great question.
It is a great question, actually. And my first point would be, for you to realize that you can quit right now. And I know you're looking at me or listening to me like, you crazy. I can't quit right now. But actually you can. You could literally quit. Put your resignation in tomorrow, Monday morning, and be like, guys, ladies, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're saying to me, I don't have an FU fund. I don't know what I'm going to do next. I don't know where I'm going to go. Got it. But the first step to, I think, being at peace about where you are in your situation is realizing that you aren't actually stuck there. You're never trapped in a work situation. You have the choice to quit today, or the truth is you could say, I'm going to leave when things are in my best interest. And in the meantime, figure out why you're going to stay. And it could be just to build up your FU fund. It could be to give yourself enough time to interview while you still have a check coming in. And so I would say to your time, your people who are questioning, like if they don't like their job and they feel stuck, the first step is acknowledging that you aren't stuck. You can choose to leave and call on your support system, or you get to choose to stay until you can leave on your terms and suck up that there's some things about staying in your job that are actually helping you get to what you want to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be some of my initial advice about folks who are feeling stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You're never stuck. It's your choice. So figure out how to make it work until you can bounce.
Easier said than done, sir.
I know, which is why we continue to trust ourselves, get our money right, and lean on our support systems.
Right.
Yes. All right. Jokes and the news?
Sure. And three words after that.
Yeah. And then word association game, and then Uninhibited to end the show.
All right. We got 4 minutes. So yeah. I'm going to go through my jokes quick. You know, thank you for giving me the platform to third week in a row.
Yes.
That's some jokes to share. So first joke. So we didn't really talk about this today, but Trump, actually, as of yesterday, Trump just went on a 17-day vacation to his golf club in New Jersey.
So you mean to tell me Donald Trump is taking about as many vacation days as Obama is taking this month?
He's taken 7 more vacation days than Scaramucci was even in office. So he's, yeah. So Trump, so he just went on a 17-day vacation to New Jersey. When asked, like, why are you really going there? We got the truth, actually. He's holding Jersey Shore auditions to replace the Mooch. That was good?
That's good.
Okay, I'm going to keep that. I drew it out because you were asking questions between my setup, but okay. Next one. Current Energy Secretary Rick Dancing with the Stars Perry is up for head of Homeland Security now. Because remember, the old head of Homeland Security is now the new chief of staff. Yeah. Right? So Rick Dancing with the Stars Perry is now up for head of Homeland Security. It's not surprising that in an administration that dances around questions, that the hokey pokey would be relevant work experience.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see what the third one is.
Okay. Okay. Trump. So the new, we didn't really talk too much about this, but Trump's new raise bill is being proposed to limit immigration. And when asked why the bill seems to negatively affect people of color, one senator replied, "I'm not racist. I'm a racist."
That's clever.
Okay. So what is this? Two out of three.
Two out of three.
Okay, I'll take the two out.
Yeah, that's you be in the Hall of Fame. You do two out of three on almost anything in life. So that's Hall of Fame stats right there.
And Daryl commented to my first joke about the vacation. He says Trump will be on a Fed mandated vacation in a few months.
Well, I don't think it'll be that soon.
Uh oh.
I don't want Daryl to get people's hopes up. There's still a lot of investigating to be done.
I concur.
Yes.
Okay.
So, time. All right. With that, we the word association game would have been about the new immigration policy that was unveiled today, but I'm sure because that's just getting started, we'll get to talk about that in future shows as Trump tries to make America again by reshaping who, how, and when people become part of this country.
Mm-hmm.
So more about that next week or the weeks to come. And we have less than a few seconds. So what was your uninhibited question?
Uninhibited, we talk about hustle and flow. I just wanted to know if you've ever flowed where you hustled, if you've ever, if you've ever been with anyone at work.
See, yes and yes. I have. I'm one of those folks that believes where you work is temporary. And so with matters of the heart, I'm not going to let a job get in the way of if I'm interested in somebody, then I'm going to go for it. Except if that person works for me or I work for them.
Okay.
Otherwise, the workplace, I think, is fair game to meet people and date and just make sure that you're communicate a lot and don't let it get out of hand because you don't want no drama at your place of work. But yes, I have dated at work and I have no issue with people who do that except if they work for you or you work for them.
Okay. So Gregory takes perks where he works. Got it.
That I'm not on.
That's what you said.
No,
okay. Close out the show.
Yeah, good thing I closed out the show. So I'm left with today's word being unwavering because I think it is awesome that folks like Colin Kaepernick are unwavering. I think when it comes to the hustle and flow of this entrepreneur life, it is awesome when we are unwavering. And no matter how things have been flowing for us in our personal lives, I love that both Marlon, Asha, and myself were unwavering and we were here to do what we love to do every week. And we did it again this Sunday.
All right. Holla.
And with that, I end with my favorite quote. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Appreciate you. Until next week and podcast out tomorrow on all the places you listen to podcasts. And we appreciate you making us a top 100 podcast on society and culture category on Podomatic. Until next week. Peace. Thank you for listening to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith Podcast. New content available every week. And I leave you with my favorite quote. Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody.